My name is Stan. I am an alcoholic. Those damn old peppers. I took a gallon of those home with me from San Angelo. And we ain't gonna have no snow this winter. There's some funny things happen when you move around and travel around through Alcoholics Anonymous, and you meet interesting people and you hear interesting things. But in order to come to the United States from where I live, you have to go through customs, and they like to have a lot of questions for you. And I don't know whether you know this or not, but if you are an alcoholic and you are a Canadian, you are not entitled to come into the United States. And so you always go through this thing as to whether you tell the truth or do you lie each time you cross the border. And I always tell them that I'm going to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's always followed by the next question, and how much liquor are you bringing into the country with you? It may help for some of you, if you need something to do in carrying the message, to try and carry it to the customs officers. Because they obviously must think that if you're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you drink. But there was this old couple in front of me, and they were from way up in northern Canada, a town called Flin Flon, Manitoba. And the customs officer says to this little old lady, she said, where are you going? And she said, we're on our way to Arizona. The old man, who was a little hard of hearing, said, what'd he say? She said, I just told the gentleman we were on our way to Arizona. The customs officer said, she said, and how long are you going to be away? And the little old lady said, we're going to be away for about 3 months. And the little old man said, what'd she say? She said, this lady, the customs officer, she wants to know how long we're going to be away, and I told her about 3 months. The customs officer said to this little old lady, she said, and where are you from? She said, well, we're from Flin Flon, Manitoba. And the customs officer said, would you believe that one time while drinking, I ended up in Flin Flon, Manitoba, she said. And she said, I had the worst sexual experience of my life. The little old man said, what'd she say? The old lady says to the little old man, she says, the customs officer thinks she knows you. When I was brought to Alcoholics Anonymous, a man sat me down and talked to me about diplomacy and cleaning up your act a little bit and leaving your foul ball language kind of where it had been, and not to be carrying that into Alcoholics Anonymous. And he talked to me about the art of diplomacy, which apparently suggested that I didn't have any. And I really didn't understand what the word meant, and I invited him to share with me what this word of diplomacy was all about. And he told me a story so that I might get an understanding of what diplomacy meant. And he told me the story about the man that was a assistant manager of a Safeway store in our city. And he was being transferred again up to Flin Flon, Manitoba. And the personnel manager, while interviewing the assistant manager, was sharing with him that they wanted him to go to this small community. The assistant manager said, but sir, I don't want to go to Flin Flon, Manitoba. And the personnel manager said, but son, if you don't go to Flin Flon, Manitoba, there's no future for you in this company. And he said, but sir, I don't want to go to Flin Flon, Manitoba to be the manager of a Safeway store. The personnel director said, but apparently you don't understand, son, because if you don't take that job in Flin Flon, Manitoba, that we don't have a job for you. And furthermore, I don't understand why you wouldn't want to take a promotion and move to Flin Flon, Manitoba. And the young man said, well, you see, sir, my understanding of Flin Flon, Manitoba, the only thing that's there is hookers and hockey players. And the personnel director said, young man, I'll have you understand that my wife comes from Flin Flon, Manitoba. And the young man quickly said, and what position does she play on the team? I don't know what I'm doing here on a Sunday morning. I'm a person that hardly believes in God till noon. I'm not a morning person. I'm a person that woke up my whole life just hating the mornings. And so for me to get up and get doing something here in Alcoholics Anonymous on a Sunday morning, I got to get up moving around a little bit earlier. And it really wasn't a big problem this weekend. Because every time I turned around, Bill was there. What time would you like breakfast, he said. 5:30? Well, a little later than that. 7:30? Yeah, that'd be fine. 7 o'clock, he's banging on the door. So I got a little wiser yesterday morning. He asked me if I'd like to go for breakfast. I said, thank you, but I'm not eating breakfast tomorrow. And this morning, I had arranged with somebody else to pick me up, and he said, breakfast at 8 o'clock. I said, that'd be just fine. He's banging on my door at 7:15. Like, I don't think anybody sleeps here. So I'm not a good morning person. Mornings was, I just couldn't believe God could make anything that bad. And that's kind of where my story starts. It starts on a Sunday morning, standing ringing the doorbell of our home, without any understanding of where I'd been, what I'd done, who I'd seen, or who I'd done the things with. And I was standing there ringing the doorbell one more time, you know, just begging to want to come back in again. And in those days, I didn't have a key for our home. Because it would seem that each time I would return there, when I would leave, certain things would leave with me. And so they just didn't give me a key for that house. And this Sunday morning, I'm ringing the doorbell, and my wife came to the door. And I pray God each day as a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous that I never forget what I saw there that day. For all the loneliness, the fear, the frustration, the anxiety, and the madness and blackness of my life were painted on my wife's face that morning. Every single thing that I had done to her or anyone else that I had lived with, worked with, or played with was painted there. And I remember her saying, but Stan, you told me it wasn't going to be like this anymore. And I remember saying to her, but it seems I have some trouble with this drinking thing. She'd been to an Al-Anon meeting or two. And she said, I don't know what your problem is, and I'm not particularly interested in what your problem is. But there's an old couch down in the basement. And until you find a solution to the problem, that's where you can stay. And so for the next 3 weeks, that's where I stayed, down in this hole in the ground on this old couch, with too much fear in my life to leave, because I knew that to leave that home would be to return to drink again. I was too afraid to leave there to go to work, because I would meet my old cronies and I'd be back drunk one more time. I was afraid to leave there because I would be back on the street and I would end up in jail one more time. I was afraid to leave there because I knew that when I left, I didn't know when I might get back. And so I just stayed hunkered down in that old basement, down in the ground, on that old couch, and I sweat, and I paced the floor, and I didn't eat. And 3 weeks later, on a Saturday afternoon, I reached that point that any alcoholic that's in this room will surely understand. You reach that point when you lose the choice, when you no longer have the choice as to whether you'll drink or you'll not drink. And that's something that day got chewing on me, and I just knew that today is the day, like I can't live like this anymore. And I just knew that I had to drink again. And it didn't matter about the family, and it didn't matter about the job, and it didn't matter about the jail, and it didn't matter about the people that I'd harmed. I just knew that I had to drink again. But there was an alternative, and that alternative was to just kind of get that old gun off the shelf and just kind of do away with it all. Because everybody would be far better off. I had never made a contribution to that home in many years. I had not made a contribution anywhere in many years. And so they would just all be better off if I just kind of ended it all. And so while I sat there trying to devise this plan as to how I was going to end this thing, the doorbell of our home rang and a man came in uninvited and unsolicited. And he came downstairs and he sat and he shared a story with me about what it used to be like and what happened and what it was like now. He talked to me about the places we'd been and the things that we'd seen. He talked to me about the jobs that we'd had. He talked to me about the people that we'd near destroyed. He talked to me about the loved ones that we had surely set aside. He talked to me about every single thing that I never ever wanted any one man to ever talk about. I didn't want any one person to ever know about those things. But he sat and he shared that story of madness with me. And it was that time of the day in late afternoon when they went to the dinner table. And for the first time in a 3-week period, I went to the dinner table with them without any understanding of why I was going there. But there seemed to be some need within me to want to be with them. I went to the dinner table. And after they were finished eating, this man got up and took an old suitcase that he had. And he went to the bathroom and he was having a shower. And he was whistling and he was singing. And he came out of the bathroom. And he walked into the front room where I sat in this old chair. And he had a suit on, a shirt and a tie. His shoes were shined. He had a smile on his face. And he said, "Stanley, I'm going to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Would you please come with me?" I remember saying to him, "Garnet, like, I'm not proud of the way that I lived, and I'm not happy about the things that have happened to me. But one of the things is that you can be absolutely confident that you'll never find me in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because, you see, when I was 17 years old, I'd been sent to Alcoholics Anonymous. I had been sent there by a judge that understood something about this madness that I was living. And I was sent there, and I went, and there was an old round table with a gray wool blanket, and there was a light bulb that hung from the ceiling, and a bunch of old boys sat around there, and they played cards. And Alcoholics Anonymous to them was a cup of coffee in this old meeting room and a deck of cards. And every once in a while, one of them would run away, and he would drink again. And about the time he was leaving to drink, another one was coming back in. And I remember they used to say, 'How are you today, Tom?' And he'd say, 'I'm not very good, and I'm sick.' And they'd say, 'I hope you're well enough to play cards, because Harry's away drinking this week.' And I knew that it didn't matter how bad it would ever get again, that you would never, ever find me in Alcoholics Anonymous. For as I sat there that year with those people, I never attended a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I never saw the slogans. The Serenity Prayer was not a part of that, or the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was an old bunch of old drunks trying to stay sober at a round table with a gray wool blanket and a deck of cards. Well, never is a long time." And Garnet said nothing more that evening except to walk out the door, to get in his car to go to an AA meeting. And we hear a lot of talk in Alcoholics Anonymous about a spiritual awakening and a spiritual experience and how do we know it starts and when do we know that we have it. Well, for me, I like to think that that spiritual experience started that night when that something took me from the chair in which I sat to the door of our home to holler at him and ask him if he would wait and so that I too might clean up and go to this meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous with him. Alcoholics Anonymous, without a doubt, is a program of attraction. Because I was attracted to Alcoholics Anonymous that night through this man. This was a man that had been thrown out of our home 3.5 years before that. This was a man that had never left our home with his own suit or his own shirt or his own shoes or the keys to his own car. He had always left with my suit and my shirt and my shoes and the keys to my car. But something had happened to him. And I went to that meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And there were 100 or maybe there were 150 people there that night. And he was one of the speakers. And I couldn't understand why he would take me to this meeting to tell them all about me. It made absolutely no sense to me then. I have no recollection of them telling me to go to another meeting, giving me a meeting list. I have no recollection of anything that really went on that night. But somehow, some way, some days later, I found myself in another meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I found myself in another meeting and another one and another one. And I continued to go to the meetings, not being alcoholic, but I kind of went because there seemed to be something there. I had no trouble with the understanding that my life was unmanageable. I had not made a contribution to anything. But I was not alcoholic. For you see, I still have the same old wife and the same old kids and the same old job and the same old whole bunch of things. And I knew that I was not alcoholic. But I continued to go to the meeting. And I went to a meeting one night, and in almost 20 years that I've been going to meetings in that city, it is the only meeting that I've ever gone to in which the sole topic of the meeting was on sponsorship. And I got a sense that night at that meeting what a sponsor was, and that you really needed one if you wanted to continue to be here. And the sense of this discussion was that if you got a sponsor, you needed somebody that was big and he was mean and he was ugly. And I looked around the room that night, and there was an old iron worker there that I had worked with many years before that I thought, in fact, I thought he'd died. But here he was in Alcoholics Anonymous. I went over to him and said, "Corky, I understand that if you want to be here, you have to have a sponsor. Would you be my sponsor?" He said, "Stan, since I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I've become a very busy person. I have a job that I go to each and every day. I come home and I spend some time with my wife and my family. And I go and I talk to the drunks that depend on me. Furthermore," he said, "I only sponsor successes in Alcoholics Anonymous." And he turned and he walked away. And I remember thinking, I wonder where the love is and the brotherhood and all of the things that I've heard you talk of. And I went and got my jacket. In Canada, you wear jackets. And I walked out of this old meeting room, and standing, leaning against an old oak tree in front of this meeting hall was old Corky. And he said, "Stanley, if you just do some of the simple things that Alcoholics Anonymous asks of you, I will try and help you find a new way of life. And the very first thing that you will do, as long as you infer, suggest, or tell anyone that I am your sponsor, is that each and every Sunday morning at 9 o'clock you will join us where we will sit and we will eat breakfast. Every Sunday morning at 10 o'clock, you will sit in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous until it ends. And every Sunday when the meeting ends, you will sit in fellowship until I tell you that it's all right for you to go home." And when I was a year sober, I found out why that old boy put all those demands on me. You see, contrary to what we want to believe, this thing wasn't always built on love. It was built out of a lot of resentment. And this old boy had a resentment at his old group and had taken a coffee pot and started a new group, and what he really needed, he needed members. And he wanted to assure himself that someone would be at that meeting with him. And I started to go to the meetings because old Corky said, "You go to the meetings." But I was still not alcoholic. And one night I went to a meeting, and it was kind of the same old meeting that I'd always been to. And I was about 3 months around Alcoholics Anonymous. And there were a bunch of guys sitting around a square table like that, and the chairman was sitting on the end. There was a man there that I had never seen before. He was a man that didn't look good. I'm sure if we'd got close to him, we'd have found he didn't smell good. He looked like he'd kind of come off of the Bowery. And I remember the chairman asking him if he had anything he'd like to say. And he got up from where he sat, and he walked up and he put his hand on the shoulder of the chairman. He introduced himself as a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said, "I'd like to tell you a story about what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. I'd like to tell you a story about loneliness and fear and frustration and anxiety. I'd like to tell you a story about the hopelessness, the helplessness, and futility of my life. I'd like to tell you a story about the madness and the blackness that developed such a self-centered thing that it destroyed everyone that he ever lived with, worked with, or played with. And how, as a result of one day walking in the door of Alcoholics Anonymous, as a result of walking and talking with the people, allowing them to share with me," he said, "that the hopelessness, the helplessness, the futility and fear in my life slowly went away. The selfishness, the self-centeredness, the madness and the blackness of my life was slowly, slowly set aside. And that I'm only lonely now when I choose to be." And I remember going home that night saying that if he be alcoholic, then I too must be. Because that it was the story of my life. My whole life was one of loneliness and fear and frustration and anxiety and despair. And there was a selfishness and a self-centeredness in me that had created an ego that destroyed every single thing that I lived with, that I worked with, or that I played with. There was a madness and a blackness that had come over me that I could never understand. And I was the loneliest guy in town. And I went home that night saying to myself, if he be alcoholic, then I too surely must be. And I remember phoning this old boy and saying to him, you know, Corky, like I think I'm alcoholic. He said, doesn't surprise me at all. You see, he had some insight into some things that I didn't know about. And so this old boy and I started to do the simple things that Alcoholics Anonymous asked of me. The program is really one that is simple. It's laid out very clearly. It suggests to us that we admit, we accept, we associate, we initiate some action, we have a change of attitude, we continue to associate. And that we initiate the action to develop the change of attitude, to continue to associate, to continue to admit and accept. I mean, it's around and around and around. And it wasn't all that complicated to that old boy, but it was very complicated to me. And so here I am, three months or more in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've just reached the point where I've admitted and accepted the fact that I am alcoholic, that my life had become totally unmanageable. I remember him sitting with me that night and saying to me that if you want the rewards and the gifts that Alcoholics Anonymous has to offer you, that it'll be absolutely necessary for you to come to believe in a power greater than yourself and to learn to live by some basic spiritual principles. I remember sitting and saying to him, but Corky, it's not possible for me to come to believe in a power greater than myself. It's not possible for me to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. I've never been in a church or a Sunday school. I know absolutely nothing about religious or spiritual things. And what you've really done tonight is to open the door and invite me the opportunity to leave. And I remember him saying so clearly, for some of us, the God of our understanding is nothing more than Alcoholics Anonymous. I invite you, Stan, to turn your selfish, self-centered being over to the care of Alcoholics Anonymous. And as you walk there and as you talk there and as they share with you, you will get some direction in your life. The direction will be orderly, and from this orderly direction will come some new goodness that you never believed possible. And so with him that day, I made a decision to turn me over to your care. I wandered around in Alcoholics Anonymous with the only concept that I could muster up. And that was the ability to believe that you believed. That was the only thing that I had going for me, that you believed. And I continued to walk with you and talk with you and let you share with me. And you let me share with you this life of madness that I had lived. You know, it comes around that time of the year in every AA group that's worldwide, when we get the opportunity out of the gratitude for the gift we've been given to make a contribution to our state assembly or to the General Service Office of Alcoholics Anonymous. And old Corky was the General Service representative group. I mean, he was big stuff there. And he went around to all these members in the group and got a contribution from them all, except for me. And I said to him after the meeting, Corky, why can't I make a contribution to this thing? He said, Stan, he said, it's our understanding you haven't done a step four and you haven't done a step five. And he said, we are a group of people here that believe that unless you've completed the fourth step and the fifth step, that it's not possible for you to maintain sobriety and that you will find yourself a drunk again. And he said, we have a tradition in Alcoholics Anonymous. Tradition 7, he said, where we're self-supporting through our own contributions, and we deny all outside contributions. Therefore, we're not getting one from you. Well, I don't know what you'd do with that. But I was at a point where I just wanted to kind of be a part of this thing. And I rushed out and got a piece of paper and went and did a fourth step. And I went and made an appointment and did a fifth step. And then like I'm 6 or 7 months sober and I'm halfway through these 12 things that they're talking about. And I just kind of thought, I'll just take a little rest here. And I drew a line right through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh, I went to the meetings, and I walked with the people, and I talked with them, and they shared with me, and I cleaned ashtrays and stacked chairs, and I did all the things we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I find myself about a year and a half sober. I'm living in another town. I'm not going to Alcoholics Anonymous there, because AA is different. I'm driving back from whence I came to go to the meeting. The resentment starts to return. The anger, the frustration, the anxiety, the loneliness, the despair. I mean, I'm hopeless again. And I don't know what to do about this thing. And one night, an old man, a longtime member of Alcoholics Anonymous that I really didn't know very well, was coming through that town. He was going to speak at an AA meeting somewhere about 100 miles away. And he drove through the town, and he thought maybe he'd just kind of stop and see how Stan's wife was. No one ever came to stop, found out how I was. It was always my wife. She was always kind of the apple of everybody's eye. And this old man and her had worked together for many years. And he came to the house and he asked me if I'd like to go to this meeting with him. And I went to the meeting. No one showed up for the meeting. We turned around and came home. And on the way home, he said, "Stan, tell me how you are." I said, "I'm fine." He said, no, tell me how you are really." And I started to tell him about this terrible wife I had and these awful kids and this banker and the people that lived there. I started to tell him about the job that I had that I hated and they didn't appreciate me. I started to tell him just what a awful thing this was, the people that I lived with and worked with and played with. And I remember old Angus saying to me that night, "Stan, it's been my personal experience that there's a direct relationship between the way you feel tonight and the kind of fourth and fifth step you've done." And I remember the anger and the resentment that I felt for that old man. I mean, everybody knew that I had done a fourth step and a fifth step. God, old Corky was taking my contributions. I mean, what more am I supposed to do about this thing? And I got to resenting that old man, and I got to eating on this thing. And a few days later, I found myself one more time with a piece of paper and a pencil. And we got down to the causes of what this thing was all about. I went and I made an appointment with a little Anglican priest. And I went to share with him the madness of my life. I remember as we went into his study, we sat and he said, "Stan, are you alcoholic truly?" I said, "I was." He said, "Has your life become unmanageable?" I said that it had. He said, "Have you come to believe that there's a power greater than yourself?" "Yes, I have." "Do you believe that this power can return you to some form of rational thinking and rational behavior?" "I believe it can." "Have you made a decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God as you understand God?" I told him I had. He said, "Have you done the third step in the manner in which it's suggested in the book?" I didn't know what was suggested in the book, but he did. And he took down the book and he read, "Many of us find it beneficial to take this step with an understanding friend or a wife, clergyman. But better to be able to do it alone than to be misunderstood." And he assured me that he would not misunderstand what we were trying to do. And I found myself on my knees with this little Anglican clergyman, inviting God to accept me for what I was. I had walked in Alcoholics Anonymous for a year and a half trying to will myself to believe in God. And I can tell you from personal experience that it is not possible to will yourself to believe in God. The only way that I could come to believe in God was that as you believed and as you talked of God, of your understanding, and you talked about the gifts that he had bestowed upon you. We're all done. I remember him going and getting us a cup of tea and coming back in and saying, "Stan, if there's anything else that you'd like to talk about, now is the time to do that." There had been a thing that had happened when I was a very young man, in my early teens. I had got involved in a situation that had caused me to look over my shoulder from that day until the day I sat with that little clergyman. And I just knew that sooner or later somebody was going to find out about that thing. And when they found out about it, they were going to come and get me. I just knew that that's the way it was going to be. And somehow, some way, that day, I found the courage and the strength to share that madness with him. I remember him saying to me that if there should ever be a time in your life when you should be entirely ready to have the God of your understanding or the God of mine, he said, to remove these things that stand between you and the usefulness to your family, to your friends, your community, that it should be now. Will you join me, Stan, one more time while we humbly ask God to remove these things? And an amazing thing had taken place in the matter of a couple hours. From the first time he invited me to be on my knees when I was embarrassed and humiliated, I found myself on my knees again with him without any embarrassment, without any humiliation, without any fear. I remember him saying to me as I left his study that day that if I would just continue to do the simple things that Alcoholics Anonymous asked of me, that he would guarantee me some simple things. And he read to me the promises that's laid out in the book, that we will come to know a new freedom and a new way of life, that the fear of economic insecurity will leave us, and we will walk through this archway. And I went out, and it's interesting what happens. Like, you're flopping around in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you've now reached a point where people quit paying attention to you. You're no longer a new guy there. And you get a sense of foreboding, a sense of like something's not right here. And then some guy comes along and says, "Stan, would you be my sponsor?" And you've been waiting on this for a year and a half. And you say to him, "Otto, since I came to AA, I've become a very busy person. I got this wife and these kids that need time and attention. I got this job I go to. And furthermore, I only sponsor successes in AA. I'm convinced that the reason that some of us stay around long enough to sponsor others so we get the opportunity to feed all the crap we were given back to somebody else. I'm absolutely convinced that that's what went on in my life. But Otto, if you'll do some of the simple things that Alcoholics Anonymous asked of you, I will try and help you to find a new way of life." And Otto and I started to walk and to talk together. And one day I said, "Otto, have you done step 4 and step 5? And he said, "No, he hadn't. I don't know how to do it. Would you share with me how you've done yours?" And so I shared with him how I had done my fourth step. That I'd taken a piece of paper, I'd written resentment on one, fear on another, sex relations on another, and posed the questions to myself: who do I fear, why, when, where, and what is the effect of that fear on me? Who do I resent, why, when, where, and what is the effect of that fear on me? And old Otto goes away happy because this is a simple thing and he's going to get it all done. And a few days later I talked to him and say, "Otto, how are you doing?" He said, "I know who I fear, why, when, where, and what the effect of that is on me. I know who I resent, why, when, where, and what the effect of the resentment is on me." But he said, "You know, Stan, like I'm a bachelor." And he gave me this topic called sex relations. And as all I can ever think of is, I have none and I want some. Well, we should be careful what we pray for. Because it was not long after that when Otto was a married man with about 7 children. Oh, I made a list and added a little bit to that old 4-step. And and set out to make amends and to clear away some of the wreckage of the past. And I was busy doing things in Alcoholics Anonymous. And from time to time, the anxieties would return, but they would get set aside. And some frustration would come into my life, and I would set that aside. And I wasn't quite as selfish as I once was. And the ego seemed to be kind of beaten down a little. And I'm doing my thing, whatever that is. I'm still stacking chairs and cleaning ashtrays, and I'm the district committee member or whatever. And I'm a busy person in Alcoholics Anonymous. But let me share with you that I believe that there is an immense difference between the word, between activity and action in Alcoholics Anonymous. Activity was all the things that I was doing that you could see. Action was all the things that you couldn't see that I should have been doing. Oh, I went and made amends. I went one day and said to my sponsor, "How do you think I'm doing?" It's important when you're new to know how you're doing. He said, "I wouldn't know that. Go and ask your mother-in-law." Well, I'm not the smartest guy that ever came to AA. But I know one thing for sure, that you do not go and ask your mother-in-law how you are. My mother-in-law spoke at 60 words a minute with gusts to 120. This lady had been fired from a broom factory. I mean, she had a Teflon tongue. You could not wear the thing out. But you know, this thing gets eaten on you that you just got to find out. And you just know there's some things you got to do. And one day I went and sat with this old lady. And you'd be absolutely amazed what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for her. She had become a totally different person. It may have had something to do with the fact that her son was a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it may be the fact that I was a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. But what I found there was a dear lady that had never interfered in my life, even though I believed that she had. That had always just kind of wanted to be my friend, and I would never allow her to be. That had the ability to forgive me for what I had done. So many times as alcoholics that we get to thinking and we get to being guilty about what we had done. Well, let me share with you that I finally came to understand that I wasn't guilty about the thing that I had done. What I was guilty about was what I had become. What I had become. We hear a lot of talk about making amends in Alcoholics Anonymous. But seldom do we hear what that's all about. And my sponsor explained to me one night that making amends had to do with restitution. It didn't have a lot to do with apologies and being sorries. That it had to do with restitution. It had to do with paying the bill for the things that I had done. Oh, we continue to take personal inventory. Seldom wrong, seldom admitting it. We sought through some form of prayer and some form of meditation without any desire to improve a conscious contact with God. Told everybody we had a spiritual experience. Tried to carry the message to others. Told everyone we were practicing the principles in all our affairs. Having listened and having heard that step 10, 11, and 12 are the maintenance steps of AA. What a crock. I'm 12 years sober. My family's back together and things are pretty good there. The gifts that you talked about in the book have been kind of bestowed upon me. I have a sense of serenity and peace of mind. I believed that the fear of economic insecurity had left me. But one day came knocking on the door, the tax man. And this man had a big bill. And he wanted restitution now. And I set out to prove that he was wrong. And on Christmas Day that year, when my family were sitting having dinner, I was sitting in my office with a calculator, trying to find a way to get even. I was full of resentment again for this thing. I was angry at the institution. And I started to build these files about how I'm going to get even with these guys. And I'm going to the meeting, but I'm not at the meeting, if you know what I mean. I'm not sharing real good with the people that are there. I'm living on black coffee and chocolate bars again. And I'm in the office from early morning to late at night to go home to sleep for an hour, to not talk to anybody, to get up again and go back and start to fight the thing one more time. And all the loneliness and the fears and the frustrations and the anxieties and the madness and the futility and the hopelessness of it all came back upon me. And I went to my sponsor. And I had a new one by this time because old Corky had moved away. And said, "Al, like, I can't live like this anymore. God, I'm going to the meetings. I'm talking to the drunks once in a while. I'm going home at night. But I'm just a mess." And he went to a cupboard he had, and he came out with a 12x12, and he turned it to the 10th step. And he started to read to me. And he read some things there that became very important that I'd never heard before that day. It said in the 10th step and the 12x12 that pain is the touchstone of all spiritual progress. That when we're finding fault with others, there is first always something wrong with me. And he asked me to go home and that each and every morning for the next 30 days to take the 12x12 and to read the 10th step. And that chapter. And so I started to read the 10th step out of the 12x12 every morning when I got to my office. If you would have asked me what the 10th step meant to me prior to that, I could have told you, without any understanding of what it meant. Let me share with you just a little bit about what the 10th step is about for me today. Because I can share with you that I did come to believe in a God of my understanding. I can share with you about the things that I have done in AA. I know in my heart of hearts the things that I have done to correct the wreckage of the past. And I get to believe in that I'm maintaining this life that I have through step 10, 11, and 12. Well, I can share with you this morning that if I was to maintain what I had when I was 12 years sober, like, you can all have it. And as a result of starting to do the 10th step on a daily basis, I started to find things out about me that I didn't know. I found out that I was really a guy that had an overpowering desire to achieve. I didn't know that before. I found out that I was a guy that was an absolute egotist. You see, I always believed that an egotist was someone that wandered around, you know, thinking well of himself. And I found out when I started to do the 10th step that an egotist is not necessarily one who wanders around feeling well of himself, but one that wanders around always thinking of himself. And so I was an egotist. I came to realize that I was as selfish and as self-centered as I'd ever been. I came to realize that I had really no self-esteem. That I really didn't feel very good about me. It's the best day's work that I'd ever done. And when at the end of 30 days I went back to see Al and he wanted to know how I was doing, and I said things were better and da-da-da-da-da. He said, I'd suggest you do that 10th step reading for another 30 days. Well, I don't know if this is any good for anybody that's here, but I've been doing that thing now for almost 8 years. And that 10th step has led me to the point that I know that it's necessary for me to seek through prayer and through meditation to improve my conscious contact with the God of my understanding. I know that as a result of the 10th step, that I have had a spiritual experience. You see, I can now do, feel, see, and think the things I could never do, feel, see, and think before. As a result of the 10th step, I don't wander around any longer finding great fault in others, because it told me that the fault always first lies with me. I've come to know a new freedom and a new way of life as a result of step 10 and step 11. I have had a spiritual experience. As I said earlier, I wasn't able to will myself to believe in God. But as I believed in you, I came to believe that there is a God, and that He can do for me the things I was never able to do for myself. This God, through you people, has taught me how to be a father. They've taught me how to be a son. Through you people, you've taught me how to be an employee. You've taught me how to be a neighbor. You've taught me how to be useful. You see, I wandered around in Alcoholics Anonymous for many years, believing that my purpose here was to go to AA meetings and talk to drunks. Well, the 10th step led me back to the 6th step again, because through the 10th step I found all the defects of character that I had on a daily basis. And I went back to step 6. And I read what it said there, that our purpose is to fit, to change ourselves so that we might be of more service to God and to our fellows. To change me, to fit me, is the purpose of what this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous is about. Because until I can change me and fit me to be of more service to God, I am absolutely no value or use to you. Oh, I am a son now, and I am a father. I know how to do that. I'm not a thief anymore, and a liar, and a cheat. I can walk anywhere I wish with my head up. I feel good about me. I like the accomplishments. I like what God has bestowed upon me as a result of my walking and talking with you. I've tried to share this message with others, not just the drunks. I mean, we wander around Alcoholics Anonymous and we hear repeatedly what a terrible job the professional community is doing with us drunks. They're studying us and pulling us apart and twisting us and tugging us along and throwing us here and manipulating us and all the things. Well, I'm one of the people that don't believe that. I believe that Alcoholics Anonymous is this day what it is this day because of our friends. And it is my responsibility to fit me and change me so that I might share with them what Alcoholics Anonymous can do to help them in their endeavors. It says in AA Comes of Age that they have wielded the sword where we could not tread. And that is surely true in my town. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, there was no place for the drunk to go. There was nowhere for him to go. And then the institution started to come, the treatment centers and the halfway houses and all of the things. And we as AA members started to resent them for taking away our 12th step. Well, there's a whole bunch of people going through them damn things in our town. And I don't go to the treatment center, and I don't go to the halfway house, and I don't haul people there. And I can tell you that I don't know when the last time a month went by that I didn't get the opportunity to haul a new drunk to Alcoholics Anonymous that has never been in one of those places. I like to tell my friends what's happened to me. I'd like to stand here and tell you this day that I have the ability to practice the principles that I've learned here in all of my affairs. And that I can just do it every day. But every once in a while, things kind of fall a little short in my life. See, I got the same old wife, had her for 29 years. Some days we get a little dull for each other. Unless I stop and be grateful that if it weren't for her, that much of this would never have been possible for me. I got the same old kids and the same old banker. And I got the same old whole bunch of things. And sometimes I just kind of forget to be a little grateful. And I stumble and I fall a little short of the ideals and the principles that we've set here. But God has been able to give me the strength for nearly 20 years to get up again tomorrow and try again. God has been able to do for me what I've never was able to do for myself. God was brought to me by you. God has taught me through you. Oh, I've been all the things you can be in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been the GSR and the committee member and the delegate and the trustee at large for Canada to the General Service Board and the World Service Meeting delegate to Mexico. And I mean, I've done about everything you can do in AA. But let me share with you this morning that the single most important thing in my AA life is that each and every Sunday night at 9 o'clock, there's a little group that meets. And each and every Sunday night at 9 o'clock, they let me come to the meeting and be a part of them. And they've always been there every time that I've needed them. And the little AA group is the most significant thing in my AA life. Because they are the ones that have truly shown me what this thing is all about. I can't imagine not being there on Sunday night going to the meeting because I'm sitting in my chair at home. I just can't imagine not being there. They have been able to take me from what I was to what I am today. And every one of those things that have been put in my way for me to do have not been a responsibility. They have been an opportunity for me to fit myself and to change myself so that I might be more useful to God and to my fellows. Dr. Bobbs told us that to acquire a spirit of dedicated service is what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. And for those of us that fail to acquire a spirit of dedicated service, may have missed the single most important thing that Alcoholics Anonymous has to offer us. And Bill wrote in the service manual that our 12th step is the basic service that we have to give. And I shall be eternally grateful and pray to God that He give me the strength to express that gratitude through my own actions for the fact that you were able to instill in me the desire to acquire a spirit of dedicated service. and to carry this message that's been bestowed upon me. A little guy in our group, a little Bill. God, there's more Bills around. This little Bill, he said when I went to that meeting, I will guarantee if you'll continue to come here every week that you will never have to take a drink again, you will never have to spend another night in jail, and you'll become happier than you ever believed possible. And I stand here today, nearly 20 years later, and can tell you with all honesty and joy that I have never had to take a drink since Garnet took me to that meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have never had to spend a night in jail since I was taken to that meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have become happier than I would have ever believed possible. And for a guy like me, that had searched a lifetime for a little happiness, this thing is not a bad deal. And so I invite you to share your experience with me as you allow me to share my experience with you. For as we share our experience one with each other, that we will find the strength to walk and to stay sober this day. And know that if we be grateful for the gift that God has given us this day, and we thank Him this night, if it should be His wish that we arise tomorrow to be His servant again, that there's hope that we can stay sober one more day. Thank you very much.